This is Classic Rain number 14 for January 31st, 2020. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Whether you live in the city or out in the country, you probably have found woodpeckers nesting in some of the strangest places, but none so strange as HF receivers. There you'll find woodpeckers that don't sound like any others. Over the horizon woodpeckers were a real pest in the 80s. Bob Horovitz made a study of these high-tech woodpeckers during the 80s. At the time, Bob was executive secretary for ANARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs. Rain's founder, Hap Holly, KC9RP, caught up with Bob at the 1988 Dayton Hemvention.
Well, the Woodpecker Project was founded in 1984 to band use information about the woodpecker to present at the World Administrative Radio Conference for High Frequency Broadcasting. The second session was held in March of 87. The report was a distillation of monitoring from all around the world. 140-some monitors in 20-some countries tracked the woodpecker for 3 days in October of 85, and all this information was distilled and presented in a written report to the HF Broadcasting Conference, and it was released at the climax of the conference. I have to say, the U.S. delegation was very supportive of the project. The report got an incredible reception among the delegation, and it was introduced to the delegates a day before a provision was adopted in the recommendations of the conference to require the ITU to monitor the HF broadcasting bands to identify the sources of harmful interference.
The ITU being?
The International Telecommunication Union, the group that sponsored this radio conference. Anyway, the wording of that provision to identify sources of harmful interference was broadened specifically to include the woodpecker. It was not just the co-channel interference from one broadcasting station to another, but any intentional harmful interference that was present in the bands. And that was a way of accommodating our interests in the U.S. position. The question of what the woodpecker is still shrouded in a bit of mystery. The Soviet Union has only said that they're for test purposes, and they say that they're for propagation research. Very few people believe that they would spend this kind of money and arouse this kind of wrath and endure the condemnation of countries just to gather information about the ionosphere. It is being used occasionally for ionospheric research, but most people that have studied it think it's a radar, and that the frequency selection process shows that it's specifically designed for over-the-horizon applications. But beyond that, it's kind of hard to tell what it's designed to detect. My own feeling is that it's primarily to detect naval vessels in the oceans off the coast of Siberia and the North Sea. But there are other people who believe that it's for tracking aircraft, and the Defense Department says that it's for early detection of ICBMs. So there's a wide range of possibilities. Even if you accept the notion that it's a radar, it's still not clear what its purpose is.
Why necessarily use HF frequencies for such radar communications? Can't that be done elsewhere?
Well, it's true of all over-the-horizon radars that they must use the same features of propagation that allow broadcasters to span oceans for the sake of getting an echo back from over the horizon. If the targets that they were interested in could be detected by a line-of-sight signal, they wouldn't need to use HF, and that's one of the reasons why people assume that the woodpecker is an HF over-the-horizon radar. The problem with that is that all of the HF band, except for a few channels for radio astronomy, are really reserved for communications purposes. Radar operates in other parts of the spectrum in exclusive allocations. They don't have to coexist with communications. But that unique property of ionospheric propagation that allows the reach of the signal to go over the horizon that broadcasters use is only found in the bands that are allocated for communications, and radars that want that same capability have to use those same channels that are already allocated for communications. And it's going to be a growing problem as more nations develop similar systems and more applications of the technology are developed.
Now, the U.S. has an over-the-horizon radar installation, but I understand that is not causing problems with stateside communications. Is it causing problems, do you think, over the pole, the way the woodpecker causes problems over the pole on this side?
Well, I haven't heard the U.S. system from outside the U.S. I have heard it inside the U.S. It's quite loud, but I must say the Air Force has done an outstanding job of selecting channels that are unoccupied, or at least they sound unoccupied here. And right now, the one sector which is on the air is still testing, and it's not on an operational basis full time.
Where are we talking about frequency-wise?
Well, all over. I've heard them primarily in 5 megahertz and 13 megahertz bands.
Does it sound just like the woodpecker?
No, it doesn't sound at all like the woodpecker. They can change the waveform, and it's hard to characterize the sound. When the bandwidth is wide and the sweep rate is low, it sounds like a chirp. But when they speed it up and narrow the bandwidth, it sounds like a buzz. It's easily detectable if you have your receiver in single sideband mode. The signal itself is an FM modulation, and if you're listening in AM, it's very hard to hear, actually. It's quite a soft sound, and it's very spectrally pure, so that even when it is co-channel with the station, you can generally hear through it much more easily than the woodpecker. The woodpecker is not just loud, but it's orally opaque.
Is that because of newer technologies?
Yes, they've designed the waveform to minimize interference. The woodpecker was really designed for whatever mission it had without regard to the interference problem. And like I said, the Air Force has been very good at selecting frequencies that are unoccupied and at choosing a waveform which is spectrally pure and confined to a fairly small bandwidth.
You're listening to a conversation with Bob Horovitz, who made a serious study of the over-the-horizon woodpeckers in the mid-1980s. We'll conclude Hapali KC9RP's conversation with Bob in a moment. This is Classic Grain number 14. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Grain from www.therainreport.com.
Let's talk about the woodpecker. How is it generated? And how does it work when you try to study it in a spectrum analyzer or on a scope of some sort?
I wish I knew more about how it was generated. I must say I'm not familiar with radar technology. When you look at it on a spectrum analyzer or even an oscilloscope, you can see that there's quite a very complicated structure inside that little pulse. It seems to be carrying a phase modulation that produces sharp down spikes, and the purpose of that, people that have more knowledge about this than I do, say that it's to identify which source is being heard in the echo. In other words, the woodpecker is more than one transmitter and more than one antenna, and they get echoes back from different signals that are on the air simultaneously. And in order to know which transmitter is being heard in the echo, each pulse carries a slightly different code on it by phase modulation. And this requires a kind of receiver that is very different from a shortwave communications receiver. You can't hear any difference from one woodpecker pulse to another, but when you see them on an oscilloscope or in a spectrum analyzer, you can actually identify which transmitter is being operated. There's a ham operator in England named Peter Martinez who studied the woodpecker signal in great detail, and he has actually identified the codes that are used for the individual transmitters.
The woodpecker is obviously a big problem because you now see receivers and transceivers for the amateur as well as non-amateur market that have the so-called woodpecker noise blankers.
It's true, and I don't know how effective they are. The woodpecker, as I observe it, often has a peculiar syncopation in its pulse. Its pulse is normally very regular at 10 per second, but every 6 seconds or so, it loses or gains a fraction of a millisecond. And I've talked to a number of people about why that is, and the consensus seems to be that it's for calibration purposes. In order to know the exact time delay between the transmitter and the receiver, it's continually recalibrated. There may be other purposes, there may be other interpretations, but that little syncopation suggests to me that you would need a very sophisticated blanker if it's actually tracking the pulses by time, because it would have to have that same syncopation. And that would be a very difficult thing to pull off. It would almost have to be detecting the signal and responding immediately to its presence. If it were operating under a separate clock, it would go out of sync every 6 seconds, in other words.
Are you aware of any additional stepped-up activity from the woodpecker? Here in the spring of 88, we've seen more activity from the woodpecker than I've seen in the last few years. Do you think it's just a matter of the sunspot cycle being more favorable now for receiving it?
No one really knows how effective the woodpeckers are. My own guess is that they're not very effective even at their best. Certainly the sunspots improving the propagation means that they're probably getting a better echo back, and therefore they might be using it more. I think, though, that the real issue isn't so much whether the woodpecker is active or inactive, because it comes and goes at one time or another, but that this whole technology is developing and that people are finding new applications and new budget money to build enormously powerful systems. The U.S. system is just getting underway. The Australian system is getting underway. There'll probably be additional systems in England, in Japan. The scientific radars are spreading. These are not for air defense, but for ionospheric propagation studies. There are at least a dozen scientific over-the-horizon radars that I know of, and there'll probably be 10 or 20 more in the next decade.
What are these going to do to both the shortwave and amateur band? That is the issue, isn't it?
It is. The issue is that there's a finite amount of spectrum, and the radars are generally operating in channels that are allocated to communication services. So it's crucial that there be monitoring by the radars to know whether the channels they're picking are occupied or not. And I'm afraid that in the case of a radar that's a relatively low-budget university operation, they may not have the equipment or the skilled personnel or even the interest in trying to minimize interference. A system like the Air Force is building, where they know they're going to be a real problem to other users, they're really taking a great deal of effort to minimize interference. But somebody who's just an academic doing ionospheric propagation studies in a place, say, in Sweden or France or Canada, may not be so careful. And because they can control their waveform and change it at will, it might be hard for people to identify who is actually causing the interference so that they would know they could get away with it even if they did cause interference.
What's the ITU doing about all this?
When I was at the Administrative Radio Conference in March of 87, I got a chance to speak with Mr. Bell Chambers, who's the head of the International Frequency Registration Board. They're very aware of the problem. In general, frequency hopping systems were never contemplated when the ITU set up their band plan, and it is still very difficult for them to get a handle on systems that do not operate within single channels. They're aware of the problem, they're aware that it's growing, and they don't really have the framework to do much about it. And particularly in the case of the ITU, they don't have any police force that goes out to shut down transmitters. They're really depending on the cooperative attitude of the nations that belong to the Union. And in the case of the Soviet Union, we've seen that a nation with an uncooperative attitude can really wreak havoc.
Are you optimistic that countries will take a more responsible approach to helping to protect the spectrum, which their own people use to listen to the broadcasts emanating from the same country that may be putting these over-the-horizon signals out?
I can't say I'm optimistic about the future. I think that this technology of over-the-horizon radar is fascinating, and it has a lot of scientific value and military value, and that we're going to see more systems in the future. I think the spectrum is going to be filled with more radars. I just don't know what will happen. There'll be a point of diminishing returns, obviously, where if the interference gets bad for communications, it's going to get just as bad for radars. The thing that concerns me most is that I think people will start to see the meteorological applications of over-the-horizon radar. That is for predicting weather patterns over the oceans where the coverage of ground stations is lacking. And once meteorological applications take over, I think we're going to see a lot more radars operating around the clock.
And that concludes Hap Poly KC9RP's interview with Bob Horovitz at the 1988 Dayton Hemvention. Besides studying the Russian woodpeckers in the mid to late 1980s, Bob was executive secretary for ANARC, the Association of North American Radio Clubs, at the time. It should be noted here that these high-tech woodpeckers went the way of the Soviet Union in 1989. And that's a wrap for Classic Rain number 14 for January 31st. Classic Rain is copyright 1988-2020 Rain. All rights are reserved. Classic Rain number 15 will post February 14th. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming!